To study this small stone is to wonder why it was there in the drain. Was the etching made by one who had seen the temple burn in order to inspire a memory of what was lost as he hid, and in order to inspire a resolute commitment to look forward to its return? Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 95, The Dramatic Drains of Jerusalem. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. It was in 2007 that archaeologists uncovered a site central to the tale of the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 CE, a site all the more striking because, even in the classical era, it was intended to be hidden from those walking or stalking Jerusalem's streets. Thus, the Jerusalem Post reported, quote, Israeli archaeologists on Sunday said they have stumbled upon the site of one of the great dramatic scenes of the Roman sacking of Jerusalem 2,000 years ago, the subterranean drainage channel Jews used to escape from the city's Roman conquerors. The ancient tunnel was dug beneath what would become the main road of Jerusalem in the days of the Second Biblical Temple, which the Romans destroyed in the year 70. The dig's directors, archaeology professor Rani Reich of the University of Haifa and Eli Shukran of the Israel Antiquities Authority, told a news conference. The channel was buried beneath the rubble of the sacking, and the parts that have been exposed have been preserved intact. The walls, ashlar stones 1 meter deep, reach a height of 3 meters in some places and are covered by heavy stone slabs that were the main road's paving stones, Shukran said. Several manholes are visible and portions of the original plastering remain, he said. Pottery shards, vessel fragments, and coins from the end of the Second Temple period were discovered inside the channel, attesting to its age, Reich said. End quote. We are further told by another Second Temple expert, Josias, that this Herodian channel, quote, shows you planning on a grand scale unlike other cities in the ancient Near East. But what makes the channel doubly significant is its role as an escape hatch for Jews desperate to flee the conquering Romans, end quote. To revisit the drainage channels is to come upon the place where the Jews who had fought on the Temple Mount and in Jerusalem fled after the temple fell, and to examine and ponder the remarkable objects that were discovered by archaeologists therein is to return to the moment of horror when the famished fleeing Jews were discovered by their enemies. But to study those objects is also, as we will see, to re-encounter the sheer love for the temple that these Jews had, a love that would never die. As we have seen, the forces of Shimon bar Giora had rallied, finally, from the city to the Temple Mount where the forces of Yochanan of Gush Halav were based. But when the Temple Mount was conquered by Titus's forces, both Shimon and Yochanan fled into the subterranean areas of the city. As the book A Temple in Flames explains, the drainage system of Jerusalem was another testament to the immense building abilities of Herod, created to allow for water to flow out of the city into the Kidron Valley. There the Jews hid. Meanwhile, the Romans, atop the Temple Mount, celebrated themselves and their leader and plundered the gold from the temple itself, which, as Josephus writes, was an immense amount. Quote, and now the Romans, upon the flight of the seditious into the city and upon the burning of the holy house itself and of all the buildings round about it, brought their ensigns to the temple and set them over its eastern gate, and there did they offer sacrifices to them, and there did they make Titus imperator, with the greatest acclamations of joy. And now all the soldiers had such vast quantities of the spoils which they had gotten by plunder, that in Syria a pound weight of gold was sold for half its former value. End quote. So much gold was taken, in other words, that the price of gold plummeted. And as we will see, gold of this sort ended up funding some of the most famous edifices of ancient Rome. The Roman legions then set about searching for the rebels. Josephus hauntingly remarks that hiding Jews thought they could last in the drainage channels until the Romans left. As he put it, the rebels hid, quote, in the caves and caverns underground, whither if they could once fly, they did not expect to be searched for, but endeavored that after the whole city should be destroyed and the Romans gone away, they might come out again and escape from them. This was no better than a dream of theirs, for they were not able to lie hid either from God or from the Romans, end quote. That, of course, is Josephus's own version. We must imagine the horror then, when they suddenly saw the top of the drainage channel being shattered from above, and their enemies peering down on them. Josephus again, quote, for, to speak only of what was publicly known, the Romans slew some of them. Some they carried captives, and others they made a search for underground. And when they found where they were, they broke up the ground and slew all they met with. There were also found slain there above 2,000 persons, partly by their own hands and partly by one another, but chiefly destroyed by the famine, end quote. Both Yochanan of Gush Halav and Shimon bar Giora were discovered and taken prisoner, though, as we will see, their respective fates will not be the same. It was the scene of the Romans breaking through the drainage system that flashed centuries later through the minds of the archaeologists as they stood within the drainage channel itself, first staring at pots for food that had been arranged so many years before for whatever meager supplies the fugitives might have had. As the Book of Temple and Flames tells us, scattered near the pots, the archaeologists found coins with the motto of the rebellion minted upon it, "For the freedom of Zion." And then they looked up and saw how the ancient street above had been shattered by sheer force almost 2,000 years ago. And it was then that they realized that they stood on the site where the Jews of Jerusalem had met their last moment so many centuries before. If then we study the various items discovered by Reich and Shukran in this channel, we could see them as more than antique objects. Taken together in tandem, they can be seen as telling a story about that terrible moment, as well as embodying all that Jerusalem was and all that Jerusalem remained in the minds and hearts of Jews around the world. One of the items found in the channel was a sword and a scabbard, a sword that once belonged to a Roman. As one of the archaeologists, Eli Reich, describes, quote, "It seems that the sword belonged to an infantryman of the Roman garrison stationed in Israel at the outbreak of the Great Revolt against the Romans in 66 CE. The sword's fine state of preservation is surprising. Not only its length, circa 60 centimeters, but also the preservation of the leather scabbard, a material that generally disintegrates quickly over time, and some of its decoration," end quote. Thus, there in the drain was found a weapon from the past reminding us how many of those hiding right there would have been slaughtered by Romans wielding swords like this. And then also in the drain, there was found a remnant from the temple's glorious past, a small seal that would have been used to mark objects as valid for use in the temple. The archaeologists tell us about the inscription upon it. Quote, "The meaning of the inscription is pure for God. It seems that the inscribed object was used to mark products or objects that were brought to the temple, and it was imperative they be ritually pure. This stamped impression is probably the kind referred to in the Mishnah as a chotam, seal. To the best of our knowledge, this is the first time that such an object or anything similar to it was discovered in an archaeological excavation, and it constitutes direct archaeological evidence of the activity on the Temple Mount and the workings of the temple during the Second Temple period." And the archaeologists add, "There can be no doubt that this is a very exciting find," end quote. This then is an antiquity that reminds us of what Jerusalem was at its height, at its most flourishing periods, when Jews all over Judea, and indeed the world, would bring of their grains, their crops, and their animals as offerings in the temple. Why is it there in the drainage channel? Why would a seal of the temple, which would never have left the temple, have ended up under the streets of Jerusalem? This is not an object the fleeing rebels would have taken with them. Perhaps we can conjecture, as the Romans rampaged, taking the gold and silver and treasure, one small stamp proclaiming the purity of an offering would have been mistakenly taken and then, because it was meaningless to them, might have been tossed into the drainage channel itself by Jerusalem's conquerors. This is conjecture. And yet to us, that tiny object is not meaningless. It conjures up a world that once was. As does another object even smaller, which was also discovered in this drainage channel. This was a tiny golden bell, which would have hung on the hem of the high priest in order to announce his arrival into the sacred sphere. In this case, as archaeologists conjecture, it is logical that the bell once became detached from the high priest's clothing, only to be discovered by archaeologists so many years later. The bell is so exquisitely minute, and yet to look at it, certainly to touch it, is to be reminded of the holiest place on earth and the men who ministered within it. And the same can be said for perhaps the simplest object, but also my favorite one, discovered by archaeologists in the drainage channels of Jerusalem. And we have sent you a picture of it. It is a small stone on which someone has etched a menorah. As one of the archaeologists reflected, quote, "Interestingly, even though we are dealing with a depiction of the 7-branch candelabrum, only 5 branches appear here. The portrayal of the menorah's base is extremely important because it clarifies what the base of the original menorah looked like, which was apparently tripod-shaped," end quote. To study this small stone is to wonder why it was there in the drain. Was the etching made by one who had seen the temple burn in order to inspire a memory of what was lost as he hid, and in order to inspire a resolute commitment to look forward to its return? We do not know, we cannot know, but this exquisite object not only brings us back to the Jewish past, it also allows us to understand what Jerusalem was in Jewish minds and hearts, how Jerusalem was always remembered, and how this memory brought Jews back to Jerusalem in our own age. For as we will see, following the destruction, the menorah was commemorated, the temple was remembered, lamps were kindled by Jews throughout the world in order to remind themselves of the menorah's light and of the miracles that God had brought about in Jerusalem. That etched menorah found in the drainage channel, in other words, reflects Jewish faith itself. A symbol of light emblazoned on an object that was discovered in a drainage channel where Jews hid during one of Judaism's darkest times. But any Jew, even in the most desperate time, who had faith in all that Jerusalem embodied, would have also believed that days of light would come to the sacred city once again. This is a faith that we remember today. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.